I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Hello and welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official podcast for the UK Seahawkers. In a week that Stephen Hauschka's name has been re-spelt after a decade of him letting the alternate spelling slide, I, Stuart, with a U and an E and an A, not an E and a W Court, are joined by Ross Bell, that's with two L's, and Adam Nathan, that's A-N and not E-N. How are we, guys?
Good, mate. Cheers. I've had a bit of sleep now since the last game.
Yeah, the body clock is not very kind on the Monday night after that. Adam, how are we?
Yeah, good. I'm just pleased to have got my sorted out my own name spelling now. I wasn't entirely sure myself how it's spelled, so I'm pleased you clarified that. Very good.
How does that happen? How does a man have not give such less of a crap that he's...
In fairness, I do empathise because I get at least 5 work emails a week either calling me Nathan as my first name, or Mason, or Manson, or all other things. And there's not even any famous Nathans in the world that you can say, like, you know, my last name is Nathan, like the actor. So that's pretty annoying.
this week we will talk about the 75-minute slog that was this past Sunday's game in the desert. What comes this weekend in New Orleans against Drew Brees and that very bad Saints defense, as well as what we'll have a few more of your questions, hopefully answered, and another round of true and false. But first, some VMAT notes. Yesterday's weekly roster churn day was no different. Rookie defensive tackle Quinton Jefferson was placed on IR with a knee injury Pete Carroll said he picked up in practice last week. Jefferson had missed the previous few games with a hand injury, and this curtails his rookie year. Hopefully nothing more long-lasting for the former Maryland star. With Jefferson on IR, the team signed Malika Goodman, a defensive end who was a 2013 fourth-round pick for the Falcons but was cut from the Falcons earlier this summer. He started 10 games in 2014, his most active year, but has just 28 tackles and 2 forced fumbles in this, his fourth year in the NFL. Elsewhere, running back Zach Brooks was again released from the team's practice squad. No move was made to fill his spot, so the practice squad stands at 9 deep. Bradley Sowell, more on him later, will miss this week and possibly a while longer with a ligament sprain to his knee picked up in the latter part of this Sunday's game. Now on to that game. An absolute in a bend but don't break defensive show from the Seahawks was parlayed with an all-time no-show from the offense. After a quarter of the Cardinals having the ball and somehow the scoreboard remaining blank, the second kicked off in the same vein, highlighted by a run and jump of Greg Rutherford proportions by Bobby Wagner to keep the score at 0-0.
A 39-yard field goal attempt from Canton Zero off the left hash mark. Getting right through the middle and blocking it is Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner literally fired through. Now there's a flag right behind the defensive line. Let's see what that was all about.
The halftime score saw the Cardinals lead just 3-0. The second half was more of the same. Cardinals clearing the clock and the offense going backwards instead of forwards, with flags every time something relatively positive worked. It was 3-0 still when Tanner McAvoy did this.
Hunter, a bit of a low snap. A flag is down. Ball is blocked. It's rolling around on the 30-yard line. The Seahawks pick it up near side. It's Marsh with the ball. He's run out of bounds. Now let's see what the flag was all about. Holy smokes.
Illegal motion. Offense.
Yes.
Who is the call?
First down, Seahawks. The deepest penetration of a night, and it's because the Seahawks blocked a punt.
That set up the Seahawks in field goal range immediately, but in a perfect embodiment of the offensive output on Sunday, the Seahawks offense went a total of 0 yards before a Stephen Hauschka field goal tied the game at 3. Overtime, after trading field goals, with the Seahawks offense finally waking up and realizing Jimmy Graham was a real person. Catanzaro missed at a Doug Baldwin catch, put the Seahawks inside the 10, and we all know what happened next. So the hit Seahawks, annoyingly for those with OCD, sit at 4-1-1, still top of the West, still looking defensive juggernaut like a few others. But that was, what was that, guys? Ross?
Whew, it was a bit of a slog to get through, to stay up until, I think it finished about 5:10 in the morning for us Brits. That wasn't kind of what I was hoping for at that time in the morning. But defensively, it was outstanding. To not one person on that defensive unit deserves any sort of anything other than absolute praise. They were superb. Offensively, it was a completely different story, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, most definitely. Adam?
I still don't really know how to digest a game like that. As you say, you're up for what seems like 3 weeks waiting for a first down, which just never comes. It's almost like that bad dream when you're running to your target at the end of the hill or whatever, and for whatever reason, the hill never seems to come closer.
It just keeps getting further.
And you're running, and you're running. I mean, the fact that your trousers aren't on is probably a separate issue in this instance, but you're just running and running, and I don't know, it was so strange, and it was just a complete level of impotence that I would never have expected to see from the Seahawks. I mean, it was much worse than the Rams game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Because it, with the Rams game, they did some things, but then broke down in the red zone. Just here, the offense broke down and did nothing. So obviously, against the Rams, you had Tyler Lockett catching balls. Paul Richardson, I think he had a nice grab, but nothing happened in this one. We'll start with the offense, because that's where the most of our anger lay. The tackle situation has got to an all-time low, hasn't it, with Bradley Sale and Gary Gilliam, Adam?
It's at the point where it's almost embarrassing to watch. And we said at the start of the year, a lot of the legacy of the front office is going to be dictated by how this line holds up. Can they keep Wilson healthy? Well, they've not kept him healthy yet, and that's a separate issue, because that's having a real hindrance on what we can do on offense. And B, the fact that you basically can take any 5 and 7 step drop play out of the playbook with these tackles, it's becoming impossible. And yeah, I'm looking at the running order, and we've got Bevel and Cable and Wilson to talk about. But ultimately, if you're cutting down your playbook to basically a third of what it can be in the passing game because of two guys, what chance have you got?
No, most definitely. I think the left is more of an issue than the right. I think Gilliam just needs to stop holding. Yeah. Sal is not even managing that feat sometimes. Russ?
Yeah, he's just getting completely beaten. He can't even grab him quick enough.
No.
Yeah, we're in deep trouble if George Fant has to start next week. I mean, I'm not sure who the Saints are even playing on defence, if anyone at all. But whoever's playing their right end should be able to beat George Fant fairly easily. I mean, it came in. Did he get a holding penalty in his first play?
He had a hold, but it was one of those where Wilson moves out of the pocket and the O-line doesn't realise, so he just grabs on.
But yeah,
that's coachable.
The left side's definitely more of an issue. I mean, like I say, Gilliam is serviceable. I'd rather have another slightly better right tackle, but yeah, left tackle is the worry, especially with a hobbled quarterback as well.
Yeah, most definitely. I think the breaking point did come for me with the left tackle was when I don't know who the rusher was, when they tomahawked Wilson and they tomahawked his arm off, and Bradley Sale was just on his backside again. That was probably the breaking point. We've got obviously all the talk with Joe Thomas, Mike Florio saying on Sunday night that the Browns will take a second round pick for Joe Thomas to be taken off their hands, obviously, and that they can rebuild with the picks they'll get. I don't understand what is stopping them doing it, because even this year, looking so far ahead with where the Seahawks are going to be in the first round of the draft, there's not going to be a tackle worthy of a pick. So you're just going to be in the same situation. The free agents coming up in 2017, don't anyone really stand out. So if you don't go and get Joe Thomas, Joe Staley's being mentioned, which would be unlikely. The Niners will trade in division someone who's probably their like stalwart on that offensive line. So you have to do something. Carroll said on Monday that there's no one out there, but there quite clearly is. No matter what Hugh Jackson says, it's not a decision Hugh Jackson's going to have to make. It's a decision that the guys above in the front office are going to make. And if Joe Thomas is available for a second round pick, you take the angst and pain that the cap hit's going to give you next couple of years, but you solidify a issue almost immediately. Joe Thomas,
it's bordering on negligent. I mean, to go back to old Gavin Hart's insurance point about Earl Thomas and what he offers, having Russell Wilson on that big a contract and not giving him any real protection is like going out and buying the best car, taking it to one of those German autobahns where there's no speed limit and just not having any insurance.
Yeah.
It's lunacy. And I, you know, we went through the list of all the players that are under contract, and it's great, and it shows up so well on the defense, only giving up 3 points or whatever. But there's going to have to be a time where they say, we need to spend more money protecting Wilson, or otherwise the whole thing is going to go, you know, where yeah, they're
really badly wrong.
Yeah. Insert swearing bleep out here.
Yeah, most definitely. As I said, I think that point for me came when I think it might be Freeney or Chandler Jones.
Jones, wasn't it? From flying.
Yeah, tomahawked, and then he took the ball. Well, took the ball with it and everything. It was just that was like, that's it. I'm done with. We kind of knew Bradley Sal was not going to be very good, but he was kind of okay for a few weeks. But yeah. Sunday against, because that pass threat is pretty impressive. Chandler Jones is an absolute phenom. As someone, I think Davis too said on Twitter, the best thing about the Patriots game in a couple of weeks is that they no longer have Chandler Jones. But elsewhere on the O-line, it's not too bad, is it? Glowinski, if any, and Britt, it's a pretty solid base to build around, if not ideal, obviously. Adam?
It's good in pass pro by the looks of it. There's still question marks over the run game. As far as I can tell, I was just trying to wrap my brains on Monday and Tuesday, and I'm thinking that the quarterback's had one good game in New York, not necessarily all his fault. And the running back has had probably one good game, and that was at home to San Francisco. And we're 6 weeks in now. And that is a slight concern that we can't get the run game going.
Yeah, most definitely. But the thing with the Niners game is if you look at what their run defense is doing, it's not much of an impressive showing to do that. Yeah. But yeah, moving on. Bevel and Cable obviously coming for a bit of flack. If it's blame anyway, is it higher than those two with Schneider and the decisions made to have an O-line like that, or is it on the coaching, Ross?
I think it's a bit of 50-50 because Schneider, how free and easy he's been with our first round picks in recent years. We're holding on to this precious second round pick so much that we could go and get a franchise left tackle. Fair enough, he's old and he's on older and he's on a fair amount of money, which would have to be restructured, but just go and get someone like Joe Thomas, or just go and get Joe Thomas, not someone like him. And coaching up that, Bevel showed there was no long shots down the field in this game. There was one point where Wilson had the ball for quite a while, and that's what I said to myself, because no one else was mad enough to watch it with me at that time in the morning in my house. Surely their coverage cannot be that good. Someone must be open after holding the ball for about 5-6 seconds. The one time he had that much time in the pocket to throw the ball, but ended up just running for about, well, not even running. It's highlighted massively by the fact that Carson Palmer had 10 net yards rushing more than Russell Wilson did in this game.
Yeah, but that also says a lot for our coverage and the health in the legs of Palmer and Wilson comparatively. Anything for you on Bevel, Adam? And Cable?
As I say every week, I don't necessarily know enough about the game to understand how offensive game plans are formed. But what I would think is that in the last three or four drives of the game, there seemed to be a concerted effort to get the ball in hand, go through Russell's progressions as quickly as possible, and just pick out one of Doug, Curse, or Jimmy, whoever's the most open, within 2 seconds. And if you can't do that, throw it away. And that seemed to have pretty successful results. I mean, we moved the ball down the field a couple of times. Let's be honest, Arizona have a brilliant defense. So it's not like we were just going up against nothing. This is a good team we were playing against. But I just wonder whether maybe they could have gone to that sort of type of offense a little bit quicker. And, you know, just get the ball in hand, get out of hand. And even if you just pick up 4 yards at a time, that's fine. Do that three times and that's a first down.
That's what the Cardinals did to us.
Well, yeah, exactly. But they also have a better running back than we had, without question. But with how the offense started to open up in the last 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, then obviously in overtime as well, they got Jimmy Graham involved, which he must have been playing hide and seek for up until then or something. But or all they need to do is just start putting caps lock on Jimmy Graham's name on the play sheet, because that seems to get people's attention.
Highlight, so, underline.
But caps lock is certainly the way to get people's attention. What was with Jimmy Graham on Sunday? It seems to happen, and then you throw the ball, and as Adam coined the Central League field last year, Jimmy Graham good at football. It's that simple yet again, isn't it, Ross?
It seemed like an entire game plan thing, though. I don't know what the plan was, because they weren't running the ball. Wilson finished with 225 yards, but a lot of that came in the last 4 minutes of the fourth quarter and the bit of overtime. I don't know. Why aren't we feeding him the ball? Because he is probably our best target to just keep lobbing the ball up to. Doug has to kind of... He works his ass off for the opportunities he gets. But Lockett seems to be kind of holding this offense hostage ever so slightly. Like, if he's not fit, then don't have him out there, because he looks slow and just like he's not fully fit. Whereas put McAvoy in more plays. Have that two big guys that you can just throw the ball up to.
Yeah, the thing with Doug on Sunday, and if you watch all the catches he made in comparison to what Jimmy was doing, is that the plays were designed to create space for him, I think.
Yeah.
Me and Adam watching it with how the Huskies are doing and all the concepts and their routes and stuff. That's what the Seahawks did to get Baldwin the ball when he was up against Matthew and Patrick Peterson and everything. But with Jimmy Graham, he was covered on like five, probably, of his... I don't know how many catches he had. 94, all of his catches, he was covered, but they still threw the ball up. That's the difference between, as good as Doug Baldwin is, Jimmy Graham doesn't need space created by how you design the play. He just needs the ball
in his general direction.
Definitely. Russell Wilson, is this a how thing, or is this a concerted effort to show that he is a more traditional quarterback, if that's probably the way to put it? Adam?
I think he's just hurt, and I think that takes away his legs. And that's a huge problem. I told you guys yesterday, I was listening to the Softy Show from Seattle yesterday, and Wilson has, in the last 4 weeks, he's gone for 3 rushing yards total. At this stage last season, he was on about 255 rushing yards, 3 in the last 4 weeks. And that's a huge part of the offense. The other thing that you will say is that what I was talking earlier about, you know, diagnosing the coverages, getting the ball in his hands and out of his hands, there are many Seahawks fans that will say that Russell Wilson is the best quarterback in the league. I don't quite subscribe to that yet. Maybe it can happen. But let's assume that we are saying that, then that means he's on the same level as someone like a Tom Brady, who has had very, very bad offensive lines for a long time, but has managed to just pre-snap, basically make himself a 6-yard play to someone. And I think that's something that, as Wilson gets older, will be something that he has to develop in order to be really considered as the best quarterback in the league.
Yeah, most definitely. Wilson's close to that upper echelon, but he's not there yet. Ross, anything with Russ?
Well, it's kind of a different point, but sex apparently makes your legs weaker. Someone got married in the off-season, and someone's wife is now pregnant. He's obviously been a busy, busy man off field.
That's not where I thought that question was going to go, to be honest. But obviously the game was annoying on the offensive side of the ball. It's more annoying than anything to be concerned about, isn't it, Russ?
Well, I just don't understand 16 rushes for Christian Michael. He was getting the same per rush as David Johnson did, and he got 33 attempts. 16 rushes for 52 yards and a longest of 10 yards. He looked good and he looked quick, but he just didn't get enough opportunities. I think, Adam, you said in our group chat yesterday that it's not the same without Marshawn Lynch, is it? You don't expect us to have this few rushing attempts in a game.
No, but it also doesn't help when we're 3rd and 34 on virtually every drive we had in the first half.
Yeah,
it doesn't help when your left tackle, right tackle take it in turns to hold people and get 10 yards on. I mean, there's a gain, I think, was it for Curse or Baldwin? And it's called back like 15 yards because of holes and false starts and stuff. And you're just like, Michael doesn't have a chance when it's 3rd and 30, because that's what CJ ProSize was active for, and he had a couple of catches and stuff. Any concern or just annoying, Adam?
with the run game? Well, we passed the ball 12 times in the first 14 plays, and another one was a rush by Wilson for about negative emotion, negative yardage, positive depression. So there was that. I mean, I don't really think they have that much faith in Christian Michael as a top-level running back, unfortunately. It's not that often that Carroll says something as interesting or as illuminating as the run game will be better when Thomas Rawls comes back. And I think that probably tells you everything you need to know about why Michaels was down on carries. I don't think there's a trust there yet that he is your lead back. And yeah, as a slight aside, you know, reading a brilliant article by Jason Jenks about Marshawn Lynch, which we took stories from team members. I still find it a little bit hard to get fully up for game day, knowing that 24 is not there. There's just something about it. There's that lack of, I don't know, badass spark that Lynch brought that just isn't quite there anymore. I've seen it with, as I was saying to you guys, I've seen it with, you know, Spurs teams when Bale or Modric or Van der Vaart have left. You're looking around the next season saying, oh, where's that player? Mm. And it almost feels a bit the same. I think there's an adjustment process going on for a lot of fans without Lynch.
Yeah, most definitely. Lynch is just, as we said before, when we praised Christian Michael, it just looked different. It was more fun when Marshawn Lynch was running the ball. And it is definitely growing pains at the position with no 24. It just shows, as we said when we kicked off the podcast 3 months ago, that he was such a franchise and era-defining player that it's one of those where I don't think we realised what we had until, obviously, now it's gone, and then we are kind of like clawing for it back with Christian Michael pass block and everything. Another topic before we move on to the defence. Obviously, Hauschka and in particular got a lot of the attention on Monday for how bad he is in that stadium. Is there any cause for concern there, Adam?
Only if we move the whole franchise to Arizona. Probably have more concerns than just what the bloody kicker's going to get up to. We discussed last week that the kicking game wasn't exactly on point. And again, look, yeah, people miss kicks. It happens. That there's nothing really to say. He just completely duffed one up in a big spot. But just got to hope that there's enough on tape to suggest that he's a great kicker, which is what I believe, despite my 5'10 rants of he must be cut immediately, which is probably slightly ill-advised at the time.
That's exactly why I threw the question to you first.
Yeah, I realise that. This gives me a good chance to sort of respond to my own nonsense, which it was. And he'll be back.
According to Pro Football Reference, Stephen Hauschka, all-time kickers, is the fourth most accurate kicker at 86.73% field goal. The three above him are, weirdly, current kickers as well, which says a lot for the current kicking game, despite
let's guess,
all the...
Let's guess.
Finitieri.
No.
Dan Bailey.
Yeah, he's number one.
Robbie Gould?
Nope.
Whoa, okay.
Seabass?
Nope. The thing with Janikowski is he's kicked so often, he's got some more opportunities to miss.
Well, that's true.
That's true.
I want to say Josh Brown, but I don't really want to talk about him.
It's Dan Bailey, Justin Tucker, and Stephen Gostkowski are ahead of Hauschka. Only Gostkowski's been in the league longer. He's been in the league 10 years. Hauschka's been in 8. So, yeah, you just hope he sorts it out next time we have to go to that building, because it's weird. I haven't really got the stats for how he is if he didn't play in Arizona as often as we do, but it's just bizarre. I mean, that was a Blair Walsh proportion miss on how wide it was. Anything on the other side of the kicking game again, John Ryan? I know you brought up a point that Hawkblog, I think, made, Russ.
Yeah, that he was kind of not helping the team a lot. I mean, he finished with 9 punts for an average of 42. Two of them landed inside of 20, and his longest was 58. I think that's a reasonable punting line for a day if you're going to have to punt the ball 9 times.
And especially when a couple of them were out of his, under the shadow of his own goalpost.
Under the goalpost,
Adam, John Ryan?
Yeah, I think he was reasonable, but I'm going to be demanding and say that reasonable is not good enough for a team trying to win a Super Bowl. And I don't think that in the last season he was as good as he was the year before when we were setting all sorts of punting record on returns. And I think that he is just slightly off a beat this year. But, you know, another player that I have immense faith in recovering, but I just don't think he's going through that great a time of it at the moment.
Have we got two lads called Elliot on the kick gunners, basically?
No, it's DeAndre Elliot, who's a rookie out of Colorado State, is a cornerback, and Nico Thorpe, who is probably been one, the most underrated, unheralded roster move that the team's made this offseason. John Schneider.
Ricardo.
Yeah, he is. He is. Yeah. I think he's 27 or 28, his number is. If you watch him on kick coverage, he is always the first one there.
Yeah, he's so
phenomenal,
quick.
Quickness, everything. But yeah, moving on. Now the ugly stuff is out of the way. Now for the praise and lording above everything else on almost any other NFL team has. That was quite special, wasn't it, on defense? As Gordon Wright asks, in terms of flipping the bird, or as he put, flipping the Seahawks in defiance, was that the best ever defensive performance in those regards in years? Ross?
I'm struggling to think of a game that they've played as an entire unit better than that. They're incredible all over the field. Everyone did their job, apart from one play where Sherman slipped and let them in for what could have been the game-winning field goal. That's the only bad mark I have on the entire game.
Yeah, there was a couple with Jeremy Lane where he nearly cost us 3 points at the end of the first
half. Stupid penalties.
Apart from that, it was something else. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, apart from a couple of game-winning turnovers, which are as much luck as they are judgment, yeah. it was remarkable. And to take a team who last year you would have said are the most dynamic offense in the whole league, we were helped by the lack of the two Browns who completely took away their deep threat, which made things a bit easier to play the whole game in front of us. But they were phenomenal. I mean, in the same way as there's not a lot you can say about Hauschka's kick because it is what it is, there's almost not a lot you can say about the defense because the numbers just say it all and the eye test just say that they were magnificent.
Yeah, most definitely. Cliff Avril, I think, as you said, Adam, last night, he was in the backfield every snap. He was meeting Palmer at the snap, wasn't he, half the time? He's now got 6.5 sacks on the on the season. I don't know what that means for houses in Haiti. But he is on a tear right now, isn't he, Adam?
It was incredible. I said to you yesterday that at least once a drive, he looked like he was going to get a strip sack.
Yeah.
He was just abusing the tackle in front of him. And he was brilliant to watch. I saw someone saying, is Bennett on a bit of a down year? But I actually think that the two of them, you need to look at them as very much a partnership as opposed to as individuals. And I think if one is doing what Avril's doing, then it would suggest that Bennett is doing enough occupying on the other side that's freeing up space for Avril. So for me, if one of them is playing well, I naturally sort of tend to think that means that both of them are playing well, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, most definitely. Because, it was Cardinals like us, their interior O-line is better than their tackles.
And yeah.
That was shown with how relatively quiet Bennett appeared on the stat sheet on Sunday. Avril, for you, Russ?
It's off the charts, I mean, isn't he? It's just like Callum said, Bennett is not playing badly. Bennett is taking more of the workload and it's leaving Avril with one-on-ones and slightly easier opportunities where he can get to the quarterback. And yeah, they work as a tandem and it's a beautiful tandem to have.
Yeah, most definitely. Then you add in Frank Clark into that and Jerome Reed and Tuba Rubin. It's a pretty nice
Frank Clark is a D-line. Wild card and all this because he can line up anywhere, can't he?
Yeah, he is literally a wild card. He could do anything snap to snap. He could get a quarterback sack, fumble, or he could punch someone in the face, I think. Rundy, obviously, as me and Adam put him at the top of the charts in the pecking order of running backs in the league, the run defense did just enough, as you said, with the way under season average yards per carry for David Johnson. The run defense is not slipping at all at this point, is it, Russ?
No, I think that goes beyond the front four. KJ and Bobby were everywhere David Johnson were. One of those two were with him every time. KJ especially, I think he's still got no missed tackles on this season. He finished with 10 tackles in this game and Bobby finished with 12. I mean, those two are phenomenal. KJ Wright is maybe the most underrated linebacker in the league.
He's probably one of the most underrated defensive players in the league, not just linebackers. Bobby Wagner was unbelievable.
I've been banging this drum for weeks that he's the best linebacker in the league.
We're going to get to standouts in a bit, but Bobby Wagner has to be. He is just absolutely everything else. He had the special teams players as well.
Yeah.
Run defense, Adam?
They were phenomenal, yeah. I think David Johnson, as I said last week, is the number one running back in the league. And, you know, there were people that thought, you know, in the Seahawk world that he actually tore us apart. And I guess the yardage would suggest that he did very well. But I think that more suggests to his reliability that you can give him the ball 30 times and he's not going to fumble it and he's going to keep just trundling up and down. I thought to stop him from doing what they did, in addition to the rest of the defense being able to keep coverage. You know, we weren't putting eight in the box on Sunday. We had to cover a lot of receivers as well. It was magnificent to watch.
Yeah, most definitely. I think his before Sunday's yards per carry was nearly 5.5, if not higher. And he had, what was it, Russ? 3.6, did you say it was?
Yeah, 3.5, something.
I mean, to bring it down, but I mean, it's like the week before, despite all the defensive blowout we had against the Falcons in the third quarter, they were still 11 points, if not more, below their season average. And as they again showed on Sunday, the defense at the minute is purring. Is it the best unit of the Pete Carroll era, Adam?
So I saw this question. I was thinking that I think it's probably the best 1 to 11 we've had thus far. And whether it's the best whole unit, we'll be able to tell by the end of the season when, you know, a couple of people get nicked and, you know, a few injuries and this, that and the other. 2013 as a unit of 25 guys or whatever was the best I've seen. But I think this one certainly has the potential to be right up there.
Yeah, the thing with 2013 unit is we don't think we realised what we had until people like Ron Parker and Walter Thurmond and Clinton McDonald went to other places and got paid and produced at a high level. That's probably going to be something we have to watch for this unit, is to see what the Tuba Rubens or the Quinton Jeffersons, if he's ever healthy, Cassius Marsh, if Jordan Tripp and all that, if they do what they're doing here in different places, then this unit, as Adam says, is on a whole, could be the best one yet for Pete Carroll. But 1 to 11, it most definitely is, I think. It's just stout, if the definition of the word stout. Russ?
Yeah, 1 to 11 is incredible. You've got probably three guys that are the best of their position in the whole league in Thomas, Sherman and Wagner. And then you've got Bennett and Averill, who are just getting so much pressure that it's unbelievable. And even someone like a rookie in Jaron Reed, we've not mentioned Mebane on this podcast, I think, once all season. Because he's not been missed. Reed's just filled that gap.
The only time we mention Mebane is to say we're not mentioning Mebane.
Well, yeah, exactly.
It's just a weird way. But by the way, Brandon Mebane is balling
in
San Diego as well. So, like, yeah, again. Right, offensive standout. Try and pick one out of that lot.
I'm going to go with Jermaine Kearse. 3 catches for 51 yards. He, whenever he got the ball on his 3 receptions, he looked pretty decent. I mean, it took for a while to get him the ball. But apart from that, I mean, you had Baldwin with 6 and Jimmy with 5, and that was it on the offense, really.
Adam?
Yeah, I think Kearse actually had a pretty good game. No, not giving it to anyone. Sorry.
Yeah, I think I'm on that. I think if I had to, it'd be Jimmy Graham, just because when we realised we had him still, it was. But that's very tenuous because he didn't do anything for 3.5 quarters. Not all his fault, obviously. No. Defensive standout. On as hard as it was to pick one on the offense, pick one out on defense. Adam.
Cliff Averill, for the reasons already mentioned.
Yeah. Russ?
I'm going with Shedd, because he led the world on a couple of guys during this. He had 8 tackles himself as well. And where would you guys put him in the ranks of opposite corners to Sherman that we've seen? Is he above Maxwell already?
He's comfortably the best.
He's above Maxwell. I think it's pretty close with 2013 Brandon Brown, though. I think the thing with Shedd on Sundays, he deserves a medal of honour for not interfering with JJ Nelson in the end zone.
Yeah.
How do you have that awareness when you must be absolutely shattered at that point of the game?
He didn't even look up for the ball either, did he? He just had the presence
of mind to, like, just back off half a step and not touch JJ Nelson, as Collinsworth pointed out. It's He is very, very good, and he's again he's versatile as well. But I think he needs a season a bit to pass what Browner was when he first came here.
Well, yeah, Browner was a pick six machine, wasn't he?
Yeah, and it also was a flag machine. He would have run over the JJ Nelson if that was him. Anything else on the game? Obviously, in the post game, Bruce had possibly the worst idea for overtime. Adam, do you want to expand on how bad it was?
So his idea was that you have a coin toss, and the winner of the coin toss get the ball on the 35-yard line, and they have to take a field goal. If they make it, they win. If they miss, they lose.
Someone needs more sleep every night, I think. There is time to sleep, Russ, if that's what you're thinking.
I don't think he's getting an invitation to the rules committee anytime soon.
No, it does. I mean, there are some good ideas to change over time. Obviously, what college do seems a pretty simple one, really, to bring up to the league. Once Haskell made the field goal to make it 6-6, just give Arizona the ball at 30-yard line and just see if we can stop them, which both defences were showing they could all game. That would have been a much better way to if we'd have missed a 28-yarder then. It would have been a bit different. But never mind. As we said, David Johnson is very good. But one other thing, obviously we mentioned about Hauschka in that building. Are we in their heads at that building as well? Because they haven't scored a touchdown on us in that building for 3 years.
Wow.
Russ?
I think we are. Yeah, I think Carroll he's got one over on Arians. And just on the two coaches and them talking about their kickers, did you see Arians' comments about Catanzaro?
And also
I would not want to play for him.
He was still sour when he did an interview on Sirius XM yesterday as well.
Yeah, what did Pete say about Hauschka? We love him, he's our guy.
We love him, he's our guy.
Yeah, and then Arians said on Monday, chewed out Catanzaro.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about Hauschka because we don't play in that building for a while yet. So. But yeah, anything else for either of you guys?
Yeah, I got one. In the first 9 drives, which was 53 minutes into the game, the Seahawks had net, and this is so obviously the penalties are taken out of this, they had net 60 yards of offense.
Flashbacks.
Really?
That is appalling.
That is awful. That is... We thought it couldn't get any worse than the LA Rams game, and it has. So hopefully this is the thing. This is the Drew Nowak realization of last year. At the same point, hopefully. Moving on.
Also, just thinking, this struck me on Tuesday. The two games we haven't won this year are the ones that we haven't given up a touchdown.
Yeah, we've give up less than 10 points in 3 of our 6 games so far. We are 1-1-1 in those games.
Ridiculous! That is terrible.
I follow the Mariners, and it's like watching Felix Hernandez pitch, and then the Mariners lose 1-0. It's what's happening. We are wasting possibly the best defense we've had of all the good to great defense we've had. We wasted it. Just like the Mariners are wasting the best years of Felix Hernandez, the Seahawks offense is wasting the best of a defense here. It's 1-1-1 when you don't give up more than 10 points. But another thing, after what the Eagles did on Sunday, we are now tied for the best scoring defense in the league again. So the 5 in a row is looking good. Moving on quickly, and a different beast awaits in the South this Sunday. Jimmy goes back to his first NFL home as the team takes the trip to New Orleans to face Drew Brees and his impressive young offensive weapons. But the offense goes up against a bad, 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 bad defensive unit. Things are going to get better on that side of the ball, aren't they, Ross?
Well, they have to, because the Saints will score more than 10 points, almost certainly. I mean, Brees is not afraid to take anyone on. And in that building as well, they average 30-odd points. Even against an historic defence, I think they'll still score some points. So Wilson has to bring his A game, and the rest of the offence has to bring their A game.
Yeah, most definitely. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, if you offered me 24 points against now, I'd probably take it, because I think I have enough faith in this offence against that defence to score 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, most definitely. So obviously we focus on the offence for Saints first. Drew Brees, Russell Wilson in the pocket quarterback that we're seeing, that's what Drew Brees has been for 10 odd years, isn't it, Russ?
Oh, if Wilson could be the quarterback that Drew Brees is, I would love it. He's the only gunslinger left in the NFL for me, and it's amazing to watch. I love watching Drew Brees.
Is Brees underrated? This is for both of you. Is he an underrated quarterback, do you think, at this point? Obviously, with how bad the team is in general.
For the stats he has, I think he is, yeah. He's incredible. Regularly goes 5,000 yards.
Yeah, and he rarely throws interceptions as well. I think he's got 3 maybe on the season. His first one, like 500 passes when he threw the first one as well. Adam, do you think Brees is underrated?
No, because I think a lot of people would still put him in the top tier of quarterbacks, even alongside the likes of, you know, it's very often you hear that if people are talking about Wilson, they say, well, you know, there's the list of Brady, Rodgers and Brees. And to be honest, I don't think Brees is deserving of being in the same category as Tom Brady, if I'm going to be quite honest.
I think Brady's in his category on his own now, isn't he?
Yeah,
but I think Brees is sort of appropriately rated, to be honest. Okay.
Yeah, the thing I'd say with Brees and how he's seen, I think he is not helped by how bad the rest of the team is, especially in the defense. But on offense, the weapons to watch, they've got a few nice receivers. They've got Brandon Cooks, they've got Michael Thomas, the rookie. Ross's rookie of the year pick is not looking too bad if Ezekiel Elliott wasn't a thing. Willie Snead.
Ezekiel Elliott, by the way?
Sorry?
Who picked Ezekiel Elliott, by the way?
I think everyone did, apart from Ross, I think. Yeah,
I did, so just thought I'd put
that out. I did too as well.
It was too easy, that one.
Yeah, and then they've got Mark Ingram, who's a serviceable back. Who's the most one to watch for on that offense outside of Brees, Adam?
I love Willie Snead. He was a bit of a fantasy hero for me last year, so I always try to look after my boys. I think he's a nice player, sort of in the Baldwin slot mold. He managed to pick up space in the end zone. He's a very smart runner. Cooks, you would hope that one of our cornerbacks can shut down. But I just think as a unit, it's going to be a good battle, and it should be quite fun to watch.
Yeah, most definitely. Russ?
Yeah, I think it's Cooks. I mean, I've seen 3 or 4 times where the Saints are backed up and he'll dump a pass off to Cooks and he'll just run 98 yards and get a touchdown. That man has incredible speed, so hopefully Earl Thomas is keeping an eye on him most of this game.
Yeah, for me, it's Michael Thomas. The last month of the season, we've seen missed a couple of weeks, but either side of that bye week, he's looked really, really impressive. He seems to have grasped it really quickly.
I think he's leading receiver.
He offers something different. My fantasy team's relying on him this week because I've got Drew Brees as quarterback as well, so this is going to be a weird week.
Yes,
as you said with Brandon Cooks, it's a deep ball wary again, isn't it, as the Cardinals was this week, Ross?
Yeah, he's got the pace to burn Sherman. I think Shedd may be able to just about keep up with him, but he's going to need the safety help. It's those little dump-off passes, the little inside 5 yards, and then Cooks can... He just finds space. He's so small, he can just burn up the field.
Yeah, most definitely. But the thing with Brandon Cooks, he had like an 80-yarder against the Panthers. That's because Zach Sanchez, the average at best looking rookie cornerback, they've got not just bit on a double move, he bought property on it. It was unbelievable how bad it was. Adam, deep ball, it's just old Thomas is going to be the insurance policy again, as always. Yeah,
you hope so. And it would be quite nice if Chancellor's back because... as Ross said, that little dump-off pass, I've just visualising Demaryius Thomas and Wes Welker getting absolutely thwacked near the line of scrimmage. And I think that sort of tackling machine is something that we could be very much in use of on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, most definitely. On the other side of the ball for the Saints, though, defensively, it is quite bad. The pick that they took for most of the first-round pick they took was for Stephon Anthony, who was inactive last week. I don't know if he's injured. Outside of that, they've got Cameron Jordan, who's a pretty decent pass rusher, so enjoy that, George Fant. But elsewhere, it's bad, isn't it, Ross?
Yeah, they give up so many points and so many yards that Brees often can't overcome that on his own. We should be able to score some points on this. Yeah, Cam Jordan aside, there's no one that should be chasing Russ down in the backfield, and he should have time to throw. And I mean, their corners are, I don't even know who they are, they're not anywhere near NFL standard, I'd say. Sounds harsh, but it's probably true.
They definitely did at one point. I think they did against Panthers. They might be starting two undrafted guys. Wow. Definitely one of them is Ken Corley. He's definitely undrafted. This is where Christian Wampler gets back to work, though, isn't it, Adam?
Maybe. I think if he is, I'd like to see us sort of start developing a bit more of a screen game, because that was really lacking on Sunday. You know, just I don't think we managed to keep the Cardinals defense honest enough by having any sort of screen game at all. And so a few passes like that, maybe ProSize in that way could start coming in on some first and second downs and seeing how that works out. I think Russell's going to win this game for us as opposed to the running offense.
Yeah, I'd agree. I just think this could be a 49ers-esque game for Christian Michael because everyone's running over the Saints. So as deep or wary that we have to be, is that something we're going to be looking for with Richardson probably, or Lockett if he's any slightly healthier, Adam?
I'm a bit worried about Lockett. He just looks so slow. He doesn't seem like he can cut. No. He's a worry. And Richardson's obviously good at catching the ball when it's thrown his way, but he doesn't necessarily seem to possess anything that's going to get him a second, like a contract in the NFL, as far as I can tell, past it once his rookie deal's up.
No, possibly.
You've always been a fan.
Yeah, I have. I've banged that job even when he pulls his hamstring on one snap last year. I think he's someone who is better than... Could be better if we give him more. Just needs to be fed the ball more, I think. Same to a certain extent as Jimmy Graham. Everyone needs to be fed the ball more, but with how they like to run the offense in Seattle, they say, it's probably not going to happen. Deep ball passing for you, Russ? Is that going to be...
aside from those two, I think just deep balls down the middle of the field to Jimmy, and he's going to rival a Gronk week, I think, this week. 163 yards Gronk got a couple of weeks ago. Jimmy can go over that this week.
Okay, that's a bold prediction from Russ this week. All right, one to watch on that offensive side. Adam, you've already mentioned Wilson. Anyone else?
Well, let's put George Fant in there, because if you are going to have a game where you're going to learn the position on the job, this might be a decent one to do it in. So let's put him as a one to watch, not necessarily because he'll be a standout player, but I think watching his battle will be interesting.
Yeah, and also how much trust they put in him. If they give him a tight end to help block, or they chip the running back, I think he will be up against Cam Jordan more often than not. But yeah, it's a good one. Russ, one to watch on offense?
CJ Spiller, if he's active. I think he might be a little bit pissed that the Saints didn't give him the opportunities or play him the way he should have been played. So, like you were saying about ProSize, I'd like to see Spiller in those early down screen passes.
Yeah, I can definitely see with that storyline, if you want to put it that way. I think he could definitely be active over Alex Collins, who had one snap on Sunday. For me, on offense, outside of Wilson, it probably is Jermaine Curse and Paul Richardson. If they get 60-odd yards catching, and if they find the end zone, then the Seahawks are in good shape. You'd expect Doug and Jimmy to match that to a certain extent. So I think if Curse and Richardson, I'll go with Richardson, because he's my boy.
Is there any reason, by the way, that Gilliam's not going to play left tackle? Because that was supposed to be the plan all off-season.
No idea. I their stubbornness for that offensive line, which we probably could have touched on earlier, is just baffling at this point. It might be Webber a reason, right, but George Fant was the only name Pete Carroll mentioned on Monday when the Bradley Saal injury was come up on the press conference. George Fant was the only name as he listed as an option at left tackle, which is just bizarre, really, when you think, add in that Gilliam thing as well. One to watch on defence, Russ?
I just want to watch Sherman all the time, because that play that he slipped on, he was going to beat that receiver to that ball. If he hadn't slipped, he knew that route was coming and he was there, but he just slipped at the last second. He is the best in the league. Other teams can tout their corners as the best, but he just is. It's just as simple as that.
Yeah, most definitely. I think it's similar with what it was with Lynch. I don't think we realise what we have until he's not there. And when he makes a mistake like that, not a mistake. He's been on the field for like 5 hours.
Yeah.
his body gave up on him.
His battle with Fitzgerald Sherman was amazing.
Yeah. And was it Brandon Marshall the other week as well? Box office all the time. Adam, defense?
I was quite annoyed at Jeremy Lane's general demeanour on Sunday. A couple of penalties he was lucky not to... Well, one he did cost us, which caused an offset, which we really could have used those 15 yards. He pissed me off, and I'm expecting a bounce-back performance because it was immature of him the way he played, in my opinion.
Yeah, most definitely. And also, as House goes, he's not had a great time of it in that building either when his knee exploded in the Super Bowl. For me, last week, my one to watch on defense got injured after I said it. So touching all the word I possibly can, I think it would be Michael Bennett, see how he does against probably Max Unger, and then we can finally shut up about how much we've lost there. I think Michael Bennett, if he can destroy all that narrative, then that would be wonderful. Give us one less thing to talk about in this podcast, but I think Michael Bennett is someone I need to watch because you'd hope, obviously, he got injured 2 weeks ago and he didn't look as gung-ho as he has in weeks gone by, so you'd hope another week, a bit more health, a bit more treatment and everything, and hopefully he can ruin narratives while he's at it. Ross, prediction?
A comprehensive Seahawks win, but the Saints will get theirs at some point as well. It's going to go back and forth, I think, but Seahawks prevail.
Score?
45-27.
Christ.
Points ahoy.
Adam?
31-20.
35-17 is what I've got on a pick-em thing. So, yeah, 35-17. I think this offense... How it looked before, a few weeks before Sunday, I think they'll go back to that. And it will have the best hangover cure in football, probably, in the Saints defense, even in that building. Hopefully we will be accurate, and hopefully the defensive and offensive, nothing will happen to them in the next few days. Right, moving on. True and false once again. Ross, do you want to kick us off?
Yes, my true or false this week is the Cincinnati Bengals will win the AFC North. They're currently 3-4 and in third place behind Ravens and Steelers.
False, because it looks like Roethlisberger, if he's not back this week, will be back next week. And Landry Jones didn't look too bad against the Patriots. He just didn't have the arm that Roethlisberger has. So I don't think the Bengals are that good this year. They've got AJ Green, Andy Dalton is like the middle of the land on the quarterback. So yeah. I think they've lost too much. Obviously, they lost Hugh Jackson. He went to Cleveland, and they gave him some issues with their ninth quarterback of the year, where he was in Kevin Hogan. They had some issues. False. Steelers win that division. Adam,
I agree. False. I think the Jeremy Hill going down. I don't think Dalton looks like he was last year, and there just seems to be a little bit of a hangover at the Bengals last year, who I really thought last year probably thought was their best chance to get something done.
Yeah, most definitely. Adam, do you want to go?
Yes, both NFC Championship game contenders from last season will miss the playoffs this year. True or false?
True.
Well, the Panthers certainly are. I'll go true as well, actually, yeah.
So where are your wild cards coming from then?
NFC East and
NFC North.
Yeah, either the NFC East has three, but I think they're going to kill each other, or the Packers sort it out and do just enough. But also, talking to the NFC North, my true or false, the Lions are the true or false, the Detroit Lions are the biggest dark horse in the NFL.
I am going to go false, just because I think with such little running game, you can't possibly be considered a dark horse. They've also, I think, won three of their games on the last drive of the game this year. Yeah. I'm not convinced that's sustainable enough to really put a run together.
Yeah, but as we all know, you can only win a game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Or overtime would be nice.
Yeah. Just not on prime time. Maybe we're still up till 5:30 in the morning. Russ?
I'm going to go with true, mainly because I can't think of another team that that could possibly be it. They're 4-3 at the minute. They're a game behind the Packers. Their points for and points against are exactly the same, which is really odd to see after seven games.
Weird.
Yeah, but no, I think with the Packers not looking like the Packers, they could steal that wildcard spot, definitely, I think.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, keep doing that the next few weeks. Before we wrap up, though, a few questions, topics that came up on the group and Facebook page in recent days or earlier today. Sam England on the group would like us to talk about the biggest NFC surprise, letdown, or dark horse. We've already had the dark horse for me, so dark horse for you, Adam?
I haven't got an NFC one because I don't think there are any in the NFC, but I think in the NFL, the Raiders are sitting at 5-2 and have a pretty well-balanced offense. The defense needs to sort itself out, but I think if they can even improve to be serviceable on that side of the ball, the Raiders are going to be a good team for a little while to come, I reckon.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised. Obviously, they had the Jags, and they usually it's a game where they would slip up, but they absolutely ran away from them at the end. Ross, dark horse, NFC.
It's hard to call this a dark horse because they're leading their division, but the Cowboys are 5-1 with a rookie quarterback.
Yeah,
I did not see this coming.
Yeah, so would they be your biggest surprise as well in the NFC? That's the other thing Sam wanted us to.
Yeah, definitely. I saw the Eagles walking away with this division this year, and they're currently behind the Cowboys.
Yeah, I may have put too much faith in Eli Manning for my NFC, but never mind. Biggest surprise for you in the NFC, Adam?
This is going to be ridiculous, but I'm just so surprised that the Rams are so unsurprising again.
3-4 is perfect for them after seven games.
It's just so fitting that after all the nonsense from Hard Knocks, you think, right, surely this year they're going to get it together. And they just haven't. And I guess I find that surprising in just its predictability. Hilarious.
that's a pretty good way of putting it. What was it? The quote was, we're not about that 7-9.
Bull something.
Yeah.
Looks like you are, Jeff.
It's exactly what you're all about.
Definitely. And he's not on the hot seat, which is the most disappointing thing I've read all week.
Four more years.
Yeah. For me, the biggest NFC surprise is the Cowboys, because when Tony Romo crumpled to the CenturyLink turf 3 months ago, Dak Prescott looked good enough to win a few games, but not to do this. That defense, the run defense particularly, is really, really impressive. So I think they are the biggest NFC surprise. The biggest letdown, I think this is quite easy, isn't it, on the NFC side?
Carolina.
Panthers 1-500 or whatever they are. The Cam Newton looked weird. The defense is terrible. The secondary is non-existent for most of the time. As I said, Zach Sanchez just is buying property on every double move he faces by a receiver. Luke Kuechly is being game planned away from. There was a play against the Saints, I think it was last time they played, where Breeze sees something, he changes the play, and Ingram goes out in motion to the near side, and Kuechly goes with him. Ball snapped, and Michael Thomas hits the slant right where Kuechly was, and it's a touchdown. Teams are game planning away from Luke Kuechly, which is something that teams aren't doing for Wagner, because we just do the same every week, every game, every snap on defense. And then the O-line is just an absolute abomination as well. And Calvin Benjamin can't do it all on his own. And Greg Olsen's trying, but yeah, Carolina Panthers.
Hilarious, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Probably more in depth than you probably thought I was going to go with that. But, Adam?
Panthers? I find that whole division a bit of a surprise. I wouldn't have expected Atlanta to be the best offense in football as it stands. And I think I was expecting a little bit more from Tampa Bay. Whether that win on Sunday can sort of kick them back into it, we'll see. But I was expecting them to be a bit more competitive than they have been thus far.
Yeah, Tampa Bay, though, Jameis Winston's so much fun to watch. He is 1 year going to throw for like 40 touchdowns and 40 interceptions 1 year. It's unbelievable. He just slings it. It's like no real, like, Christian Michael runs the ball is how
James plays quarterback.
There's no concernable technique going on. He just absolutely guns it downfield. And Mike Evans, being a basketball player, effectively, he just nabs everything. He's not dropping as many balls this year. Ross, Panthers, yeah?
Yeah, certainly. Hilarious. Your hubris has come back to haunt you, taking celebration selfies in the third quarter of games last year and all that. The dabbing. Yeah. Oh, you deserve this. 1-5.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, both Super Bowl teams don't look particularly hot. Obviously, the Broncos are winning because their defense is as good as ever. Von Miller's an animal. But yeah, one final one. Daniel John wants us to talk about the running back situation. We already have a little bit, but are we in trouble at that position, Russ?
We need rules back. Is he up and running this week? I've seen Carroll say.
Pete Carroll said they're aiming for the Bills game in 11 days. So.
Okay, I don't want him
quicker
to,
than I thought.
Yeah, I don't want to rush him back, but we need him at the minute.
Yeah.
We need someone to just run over people as well.
Yeah, I think in that Jason Jenks story, which was on Seattle Times yesterday, as Adam mentioned earlier, Thomas Walls' mum says that Marshawn Lynch watched him and walked up to him at the end of a practice or scrimmage or something and said, "You've got it in you." And that picture of him literally tapping like all the power, it seemed, on his head, and that when all the memes and all the stuff kicked off for that, I think he's needed massively. Situation at running back, is it troublesome, Adam?
No, because Thomas Rawls is going to come back and then we're going to be great again. And then in the slightly longer term view, there's plenty of players in next year's draft that if the game takes a bit of a step back this year, there's no reason for that to be the same next year, because there are some absolute ballers, as we've discussed a few occasions.
Yeah, exactly. That's my main thing. If Rawls comes back and can't stay healthy, you just get through the growing pains like we did with Juno Akka, Patrick Lewis at centre. It's exactly the same running back, because the running backs in this draft, I'm quite happy taking one at the end of the first round, because it's going to be the Leonard Fournette. He's not going to be there probably, but he buried a guy on Saturday night. He absolutely destroyed someone by running.
Yeah, I saw that.
And there's Nick Chubb and there's Royce Freeman, obviously, as well, later stages. It's just running backs all the way through. So if it doesn't pan out for the rest of this season, then we can easily find a 2.0 as close to Lynch as we're going to in this upcoming draft. One chapter note, more news is coming, but the 2000 AGM venue and date has been arranged. That will be announced soon, along with all the information with 2017 membership. For more information on how to join the chapter and all the other stuff, go on to our official website at ukseahawkers.com. Looking ahead to next week, we are going to have the man, Kevin Cadle, join us. If you want to get involved and send a question in to us for Kev, possibly not on all topics, then go ahead. Those of you who were in Manchester in April, where Mr. Cadle was our guest for the night, know how fun next week's pod could well be. We will post on all social media platforms for you how to get involved on that. And also, Ross, we'll possible streaming it live next Wednesday?
Yes, we're going to try. We tried last week to moderate success, and we're going to try again next week. So, yeah, you'll be able to join us in a chat room, and you'll be able to chat amongst yourselves and listen to us record live with Kevin Cadle.
Yeah, it really, really, really should be some fun. He seems really keen and eager for it. So we'll announce it probably about 1 p.m. next Wednesday afternoon. So on that note, Ross, where can people get in touch with us and help out this little podcast of ours?
This little podcast of ours is on iTunes. If you get us from there, please just go and leave a little 5-star rate and review, because all of those that you do give us a bit more visibility on iTunes. You can also get us on the pedestrianpodcast.podbean.com, which is where we are hosted by. And while you're there, you can leave a donation, you can leave a comment, you can leave a question, anything like that, because you can use Facebook comments on there. I forgot to say last week, thank you to Lenny Sapp for his donation. Greatly appreciated, and it's gone to pay in for the podcast for another month. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. Lenny told me a few weeks ago he was going to do it, so it was very cool to see that photo you posted. And also there is something else I think Lenny's trying to arrange for us as well, which we'll talk about off air. We will be back and live next week, hopefully. Thank you so much for listening. The comments and feedback and questions are all greatly appreciated. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Hope you enjoyed this week's game. See you next week.
Go Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champions.